Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 18. And Dave, the season is upon us. In fact, it is unlike us to start with anything other than Steeler talk. We've had it now and then, Eagles Depot for a while. We've gone our different routes. But let's kick things off with the season kicking off last night with the Kansas City Chiefs kicking the living crap out of the New England Patriots in a game that I'm sure brought warmth and joy to Steelers fans' hearts.
Boy, what a game that was, and the way it started off, you know, with the Patriots using that hurry-up offense and marching right down the field and going up 7-0, and then the Chiefs get the ball on the first carry by rookie running back Kareem Hunt. He puts it on the ground, something he never did when he was at Toledo.
855 touches at Toledo.
Yeah, and he puts it on the ground, Patriots ball, and you're thinking, all right, go ahead and give him the Lombardi again. You know, I mean, I know that's over the top there, but you're thinking, boy, this Patriots team with even some of the losses and the additions that they had is right back going where they need to be. And you know, I thought early in the game with the after that turnover, Gronkowski not being able to hold on to that football in the end zone was a big play. And then I think getting that fourth and one stop early on, immediately after that, was kind of a huge turning point in that game. Well, I wasn't overly impressed with the Chiefs defense throughout the game. Did a lot of rushing three. That kid Mitchell on the right side of their defense seemed to be getting eaten up alive. A lot of pass interference penalties. The Chiefs as a whole, boy, they tried their best to let the Patriots hang around. They had 15 penalties, I think, in the game.
And lost a turnover battle, 1-0.
Right, lost a turnover battle. The explosive plays now, they were even 5 each. But I've got to come up with some sort of variable for double and triple explosive plays, because that, I think, was really the difference in the ball game. The Chiefs had more than triple explosive plays, and they almost had another play, I think, that went for 58 yards that was nearly a triple explosive play as well, too. So, yeah, they only had 5 explosive ones, but oh, boy.
Just for people who don't, as we get into the season and start talking more statistical stuff, explosive plays were defined as 20 yards, and double explosive, of course, 40 yards.
Right, and triple, of course, 60. And, boy, the Chiefs had 3 drives of 90 yards or more. Where did that come from? And Alex Smith didn't look like – I mean, Alex Smith did look like Alex Smith at some points during the game. You know, the throwing short of the chains on third downs. But, you know, he never really made any mistakes. And you know, the tag on him, game manager, well, yeah, he managed the game. I think there was only one pass that was that probably could have been picked off. That was the one, I think, that went through, who was it, Chung's hands, that ended up in the hands of a wide receiver there. But outside of that, you know, he showed us he could stretch the football field as well. And, you know, when you get back to the Chiefs defense and all, I want to go through that all 22. You can bet everybody in the league wants to go through, through that all 20, all 22 film. You got to make Brady go downfield, right? You got to make him try to stretch the field. And that's what he tried to do. And he was very unsuccessful. I think he completed just 3 deep passes in the game. Obviously, they missed a guy like Julian Edelman. Danny Amendola is not Julian Edelman. And when they lost Danny Amendola to a concussion to the game, they pretty much had Brandon Cooks and the new kid, Dorsett, out there, and I think that really hampered their offense as well. And then you throw in the fact that Gronkowski had just two catches for 33 yards. That's tremendous in that aspect, and the Patriots defense, you know, they just didn't have the answers either. So, you know, that's kind of a nutshell. But like I said, boy, I can't wait to hit that All-22 film.
Yeah, a couple things there. In the regular season last year, the Patriots didn't give up a touchdown of more than 26 yards, which is an extraordinary stat. I hadn't heard that stat until last night. Of course, they gave up 75 and 78-yard touchdowns. You touched on Kareem Hunt, the historic day that he had. That's the most yards from scrimmage ever by a guy in his debut. And just to put it in perspective, 202. What did he finish up with? 227 touches, 246 yards from scrimmage, three touchdowns. It's 17 carries and five receptions. David Johnson has never eclipsed 229 yards from scrimmage in two seasons. LeSean McCoy's never been over 200 yards from scrimmage in his career of 8 years. Le'Veon Bell's only topped the number that that Hunt put up last night twice in his career. So he was great. As you mentioned, Alex Smith was willing to take some shots downfield, and he hit them most of the time when he did. I think he threw for 358 or so. Two things to take away from this. One is massive loss for the Chiefs, and you got to feel a little bit heartbroken for Eric Berry because it looks like he tore his Achilles tendon. If you know the story, the backstory of Eric Berry, came back from cancer. I think he was first team All Pro last year, Dave. Maybe correct me if I'm wrong there, but just an outstanding safety. And they have, Kansas City's pass defense was great last night. That's going to be a big loss to that defense, and that's unfortunate. You mentioned Danny Amendola. We talked about the weapons the Patriots have with Hogan, acquiring Dorsett right at the end of the preseason. Amendola in there. If Amendola's out for any extended period of time, you'll remember last week DeMarcus Ayers signed with the New England Patriots. And if they have to make a roster move, now Danny Amendola's not going to be out for the season with a concussion or anything, but if he's out and they decide they want to bring in a guy as a punt returner, that potentially opens the door for DeMarcus Ayers. So there'd be just a side note of something to watch. But Dave, I think for me the takeaway was, how good and explosive Kansas City's offense looked. You added dynamic back in with Tyreek Hill and obviously Kelce, who continues to lose his mind about every game, which is a huge negative. That was one. But I think there, as you said, the reason everybody's going to be screaming to the All-22 is this Patriots defense got exposed. And the last time a Bill Belichick team gave up 42 points was 1991. I mean, it was really surprising.
Yeah, it really was. And it will be interesting to see, and look, I mean, I'm interested to see what the Chiefs did on that All-22 look as well, too. Now, they obviously, Brady missed some throws. You agree?
He did. No question he missed a couple. He wasn't bad, but he wasn't great.
And then you think about it too. How many pass interference penalties did the Chiefs defense have called on them? Two or three at least, right? A couple on Mitchell, well. So the Patriots had their breaks there as well. Look, you're not going to entirely shut down this Patriots offense, and the Chiefs really did not entirely shut down the offense. You got to have a little bit of luck along the way. You got to have Tom Brady miss a couple of throws or two, and then, later in the game, they didn't really start hitting Brady, David, until later, after the game.
Yeah, they got him with that clean sack late, but they didn't hit him much.
When the game looked like it was pretty much decided was when it looked like they finally started hitting him in the game. So I don't think the Chiefs did a good job of moving Tom Brady off of his spot. I think maybe the biggest takeaway, and once again, the Patriots still had five explosive plays in this game. They just didn't. They kind of limited that and the damage afterwards, as well, too.
I think you were spot on. The point you mentioned up top, the Gronk non-touchdown. I mean, if that's 14-0, 5 minutes and 11 seconds or whatever it was into the game – I'm not sure the Chiefs ever recover from. Maybe they do. I mean, you know, it's all speculative. But I do think you're right. That was a huge play.
Right. And you know how we always talk after you usually almost after every Steelers game talking, boy, there's five or six plays you can circle in every game. Right. Not only in Steelers, but league wide that really kind of can oftentimes determine the outcome. How big, you know, the 2 fourth down stops. Right.
Yep.
I mean,
those
were massive. The drop by Gronkowski in the end zone.
Let me ask you about those two fourth down plays, because everybody knows, and if you're a Steeler fan, you know, it's a play the Patriots run with almost 100% success that the Steelers never run, and that's the quarterback sneak. And Dave, the question to me that I had, and I think I saw this on a little bit of a conversation on Twitter, is you assume they didn't run the quarterback sneak because Brady saw him stacked inside in tight, and he just didn't see the opportunity there. But then doesn't it make sense not to run the kind of, you know, almost the fullback dive right up the middle into that same area? I was a little bit curious to the play call when they opted not to run the quarterback sneak.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, maybe Brady knows now that, I mean, that's the cover story on fourth and one. I mean, you expect.
For sure. And it has been for years, though.
You know, and now everybody knows it. You know, not just, yep. I mean, Joe Blow's sitting at home now. Average Joe football fan knows what's going to happen on fourth and one with the Patriots there. So, I don't know. You know, I don't blame them for going for it. I obviously, you know, why you would think a little bit maybe. You know, you obviously want to run up the gut. You don't want to have too many moving parts in those situations, you know, trying to pull a guard or trying to run some misdirection or anything. So, yeah, kind of questionable there. And, you know, Bill Belichick doesn't give you much after games anyway, and especially after losses, but, you know, just didn't execute.
Yeah. One last thing, and I threw this out on Twitter this morning. Does Kareem Hunt, I realize it's one game, but, you know, we've seen, you know, he's a third round pick from Toledo, and a lot of people liked what he brought to the table, you know, coming out of the draft. Does Kareem Hunt's performance in any way impact the decision the Steelers will have to pay Le'Veon Bell $15 million next year?
Wow. I mean, that's just one game, you
right.
know? I mean, it's just one game. You know, I don't think you can – I don't think – I know today's going to be full of narrative building across the NFL.
Yeah, that's the fun part.
On talk radio and blogs and media stories.
Twitter craziness.
Twitter, I mean, overreaction Friday for sure. It's just one game. I mean – I mean, they tried to make Le'Veon Bell the highest paid run. I mean, he is the highest paid running back, and they tried to pay him an average yearly salary, all about that. But you know, you keep going back, David. You know, some good teams have won some Super Bowls without, you know, with not great running games and having a committee back there and those kind of things. So. You know, like it or not, it's great when you have a great back such as David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell and Devontae Freeman and all guys that are multi-purpose, can run the ball and can catch the football, can give you 50, 60 catches a year, but it's still just one player, though, and I don't believe those guys can single-handedly win you games. Now, you can make a case that Hunt did that last night, yes, but I think week in and week out, it's rare for us to be able to say that running back won that game. So, look, the tag is what it is with Le'Veon Bell, right? It's $14.54 million next year. You know, that's the only way the Steelers are going to be able to retain him. They were willing to pay him $30 million over the first 2 years with that contract they reportedly offered him. They'd be getting out cheap by slapping back-to-back tags on him again. So, you know, I think it's going to boil down, obviously, to how Le'Veon Bell plays this season and his health and everything that goes along with that. But, you know, I obviously, and I've said it before, I don't think there's going to be a long-term deal for him at this point. I mean, even if he puts up 2,400, 2,500 total yards from scrimmage, I doubt he's going to get an average yearly salary of $15 million a season out of the Steelers on a new contract. I think they just paid a $14.54 million tag and move along. But it never hurts to have a back that can do it all.
Yeah, absolutely. We talk about injuries and how they decimate teams, and we'll see what happens with Eric Berry. But, you know, Spencer Ware got hurt. That opened the door for Kareem Hunt. He wouldn't have had that night last night if Spencer Ware was healthy and on the roster. Spencer Ware would have been the starter and probably gotten the bulk of the touches. But there you go. Opportunity taken and a really fun game to watch. And you know, so many times we talk about Thursday night games as being boring and, you know, the television schedule isn't good. I think everybody in the country got, except those living in Metro Boston, the New England area, everybody got an entertaining game. And I think everybody probably enjoyed the hell out of that one last night. So onward we go to talking Steelers as we are, literally here, 50 hours, the 49 for us, for Dave and I, 49 and a half hours from kickoff in Cleveland with the Steelers and the Browns. And Dave, the one thing that's going to happen here in the next 24 hours is the Steelers are going to make a roster move. They've got to make it by 4 o'clock and they'll reinstate Le'Veon Bell to the roster. And I've had some thoughts on this and let me get your thoughts. They're going to have to cut somebody. And we've talked a lot about Stevie Johnson. It's not going to be Stevie Johnson. Stevie Johnson ran with the first team special teams guys yesterday in all the units. So it's clearly not going to be him. So, Dave, for me, it really comes down to two or three, like even just the range of possibilities, not likelihood. The range of possibilities to me really comes down to two or three guys. The first and obvious guy for me is Dan McCullers. The second guy that I'll throw out there that I think, you know, a couple of the beat writers have thrown this out there as well, and it goes back to kind of one of my views from the offseason, is William Gay. You know, if you think that Mike Hilton's going to be a guy and Cody Sensabaugh is a capable guy, is William Gay expendable at this point? Because while he can play special teams, he's an older guy. Is he really going to be a dynamic special teams player? And then the third guy, and I'll throw it out there. I don't think it's likely, but just trying to come up with names. Well, okay, the third guy, I'm sorry, is the fourth round pick, Hawkins. There's a chance that Hawkins could go to the IR with his knee injury, I guess. And then I'll throw out Justin Houston, but I don't think that's particularly likely. Your thoughts?
Yeah, if Stevie Johnson, and it looks like he's fine from that hamstring injury, and we've said time and time again he's a special teams demon. But with that said, he did start, that last season, first year with the Steelers, he comes in as a special teams ace. He was inactive for those first three games, so.
Yep.
It makes you kind of wonder, but I mean, when you consider that the team lost Jordan Dangerfield here recently and had to waive him injured, and he's now on IR, you would think you're gonna want some sort of body to help replace him, and Stevie Johnson would be a nice guy for that. Hawkins, man, I don't see how that injury all of a sudden is going to end his season. Now, I know he was limited on Wednesday and then didn't practice, I don't think, on Thursday there. Boy, if he goes to IR, well, yeah, definitely that's an easy move right there. And how disappointing would that be for him 2 years on IR in a row there? As far as names to throw out there, I mean, any chance a guy like LJ Fort, who they've shuffled back and forth before, is on the out? I mean, they obviously now have five inside linebackers. You're not going to dress all five. I mean, you're not going to dress all 10 linebackers in this game, are you? And if you don't, and you're going to dress Stevie Johnson, could LJ Fort be the guy that bounces on the waiver wire? Fans will lose their mind if LJ Fort is waived.
I'll lose my mind if it's LJ Fort. I think he's going to be, a key special teams guy as well. So I don't think so.
You know, I mean, I agree. And that's why I said fans will lose their mind, because he had such a great preseason. But is he a guy that you could yo-yo on the weekend? On the way, because look, nobody's going to claim LJ Fort. He's going to clear waivers. You would think, unless the Patriots or the Chiefs were interested in him at this point. Geez, David, I mean, Daniel McCullers.
If you had to bet today, would you pick Daniel McCullers?
Let me look at this list one more time. I mean, it's not going to be. They're not going to cut Moats or Gay now. They would have. They would have already cleared that cap space if they wanted to. I think. You know, they've already they've already restructured contracts and stuff like that. So they're not going to cut Moats or Gay. I don't think at this point. I mean, you're not going to waive the rookie Brian Allen. I don't think you're going to waive Terrell Watson. You know, the running back, because he's probably going to play on special teams for you. You know, could you waive Matt Filer over the weekend? I mean, he had a great preseason. You'd worry about a team claiming him. Yeah, no sense wasting a lot of time on this, but I think it's either McCullers or Fort or Steve Johnson or, like you said, Gerald Hawkins possibly going to IR. I mean, that's the best I got.
Okay. All right, so let's get into a little bit. You mentioned some restructuring here. We saw with J.J. Wilcox. We saw with, was it with Cam? So
right.
Two deals restructured to create some space, and we, as you mentioned, we expect to see Stephon Tuitt's extension, you know, sometime in the next 24 hours.
Yeah, they after all these extensions, roughly about $7.5 million in salary cap space, according to my spreadsheet. Now, this morning, there was a $619,200 against the cap, and I believe that's a workout bonus charge because all the teams got charged it on the NFLPA sheet there. So let's just say they have $7 million in cap space right now. You have to go in and consider that the team likes to have roughly $3 million in reserves for in-season injuries. So that leaves $4 million in cap space for the Steelers. And then you really can go ahead and add back onto that what Stephon Tuitt's current cap charge is, and that current cap charge is, you know, well, basically a placeholder would be his base salary, which is $1 million there. So, and you know, that's obviously going to be replaced by a new deal there. So you're probably looking at a cap charge for Tuitt on this deal at being, you know, a 2017 cap charge at being right around, you know, $5 million or so. We can obviously work backwards from there. I don't know. What are you thinking?
I think Tuitt's going to get Cam's deal at the end of the day. He's going to get, you know, roughly the same deal Cam got.
Yeah, I think he might get a little bit more now. I think he could see a signing bonus, you know, maybe, I don't know, 15, 16 million or so, you know, that high. But rest assured, I think we should expect that deal to happen today or obviously by tomorrow. You would think they don't, we're right, you know, I think and what the holdup here is too, make sure you get through this final Friday practice and then go get him a pin to sign the deal. So I think later on tonight is when we'll start hearing the numbers rolling.
So Dave, let's give a little tribute to the 2016 Steelers not on the roster. I don't know, I can't remember if we've done this in the past, but I'm just going to read the names of the guys just to give people some memories of 2016. These are the guys no longer with the team who dressed at least at some point. Dave, I think I'll get a chuckle out of you on some of these names at the end of the day. DeMarcus Ayers, we're doing this alphabetically. Randy Bullock. As you'll remember, the Steelers going through some of their kicking situation early in the season. Randy Bullock is a guy who they had signed for a game. Sammy Coates, Ross Cockrell, Jordan Dangerfield, who Dave and I both think we'll see at some point again later this year. Justin Gilbert, a guy, you know, we hardly knew yet. Played a little bit in that Kansas City game. Never got an opportunity in the kick return game. Ladarius Green. Brief shining moment or two. Kobe Hamilton, believe it or not, Kobe Hamilton started 8 games for the Steelers last year at wide receiver. Ryan Harris, backup tackle, who got that contusion midway through the season and never got an opportunity to come back. David Johnson, we've talked a lot about him. Ricardo Matthews, the guy who I thought, Dave, we would see come back. You know, Tyson Alualu essentially took his spot on the roster. Johnny Maxey, who was active for a couple games during the season, didn't get take advantage of his opportunity in the preseason. Daryl Richardson, a running back who is bounced around still. He was one of the guys cut in the last cut this past week. Al Shabazz. Do you know where Al Shabazz is, Dave? Is he? Do you know if he's on a roster?
He signed with the Ravens. I think he got waived injured, and I think he reverted back to their IR. If memory serves me, that didn't happen too long ago. I think with him, but I think he was with the Ravens, got injured, and then was waived injured.
Shamarco Thomas, of course, cut by the Jets in the final cut. Lawrence Timmons, who's finding work in Miami as a free agent. Fitz went to the practice squad. Cody Wallace. Where's Cody Wallace, Dave? Any idea on him?
Nowhere. He, you know, he had that knee injury last year and never could recover. Went on IR and he's probably done now.
Greg Warren, of course, retired. Didn't pass the physical. We talked a lot about Holby, the sixth round pick that they used. Marcus Wheaton, who had busted up his finger early in camp with the Bears. I assume he made their final roster. Did he, Dave?
He did. Plus, he had to have an appendectomy as well. That kid's had some rotten luck, man. Rotten luck.
And, of course, a guy who's a little bit of a surprise out there, who a lot of people we talked a lot about in the offseason. I didn't expect to see him back. He's not. Is D'Angelo Williams. And as best I know, never got the phone call from anybody.
Yeah, still unemployed as well, too.
That's it. There's your list of guys who are not with the Steelers in 2017.
Well, don't forget our buddy Zach Mettenberger.
That's funny because Zach didn't appear in a game that he's not on this list of the of guys on the roster. You're right. When did Zach get the bounce?
During the offseason, right? So at some point.
Yeah, that's right. He made it through the season, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Brian Mahalik, he was on the roster.
Wow, I'm looking at this. This is Pro Football Reference. I don't. Yeah, did he ever dress for a game?
No, I don't think. If he did, he never played a snap in one. I can't remember if he had to dress because of the inactive list at some point there. But he didn't play any. I'm trying to think if you missed any others in here as well too. But that's a big list of guys. You know. No longer in Pittsburgh. So props to Kevin Colbert on churning this roster. Let me ask you, David, there's a lot of writing. I think we might have even had a kind of an article similar to it on Steelers Depot as well, too. You know, with the narrative, I don't think ours was so much built around the narrative that I want to talk about. But are you buying this? Oh, the Steelers are concerned that this might be Roethlisberger's last year. So they're really going all in.
Oh, you're right up my alley, man. You gave me the softball I was looking for. Just a bunch of nonsense. They didn't approach this any differently than they approach any other season because, you know, of what happened with Ben. No, zero chance. They would pursue this the same way regardless of the situation.
I want to go off on people so bad, but I've been trying to turn over a new leaf and all and you know, on Twitter to some degree. But what a bunch of crap, right? I mean,
I'm with you.
I mean, okay, yeah, he's made some uncharacteristic late moves, but how much did the roster rules changing have to do with that this year? Kind of thing. Sure, but I mean, let's face it. I think a lot of people were glad to see Vance McDonald in the fold now, but was that really blockbuster material right there? Obviously, the Joe Hayden signing was big, but he was a free agent. And then I wouldn't exactly – I mean, look, I'm glad J.J. Wilcox is in the fold too. I'm quite interested to see if he's able to hit the field maybe in some dime or you know, other limited play, especially on some special teams. But let's not go calling that a blockbuster deal as well too. They sent away Ross Cockrell for a conditional seventh-round pick. Hey, it's either get a ham sandwich or nothing, and that was going to be the case with him. Sammy Coates, I think it was kind of evident by them dealing Sammy Coates away for that pick that they gave away for Justin Gilbert that they just didn't think Sammy Coates was going to develop into the player that they thought they would be. This has zero to do with Ben Roethlisberger may or may not be his final season, in my opinion. This is just Kevin Colbert doing what he does every year, just in a different manner. How many times do we talk about, heading into the preseason, boy, what are the final three moves going to look like this year? You know, is somebody, you know, are they going to break training camp and a play, two players, three players end up on the 53-man roster that never even spent time at Latrobe? We've seen Kevin Colbert do that multiple times over the years. He just went about it a little bit different this way. So I just had to get that off my chest there, that narrative floating around.
And I'm glad you did.
Okay, where else do we want to go on here? Let's talk about the 2007. Well, let's talk about the injury report real quick. There's not much there when you look ahead to Steelers-Browns as far as the Steelers side there. The week opened up, we wondered if Mike Mitchell or if Steven Johnson would be on that thing because Mike Tomlin said you could characterize both those guys as questionable. As it turns out, neither were on it. Gerald Hawkins was on it with a knee. He was limited on Wednesday. He did not practice on Thursday. And then Bud Dupree was added with a shoulder injury as being limited on Thursday.
Very, very crazy little story. I got a little inside report yesterday on the Bud Dupree listed on the injury report with a shoulder injury. When asked what his injury was, he said ankle.
Well, the ankle bone's connected to the shoulder bone.
So I don't know what to make of that other than that was a little bit curious.
Yeah. And you know, maybe that's the mysterious injury, you know, unspecified injury that caused them to miss time during training camp on the first two preseason games. Boy, you hope it's nothing serious there when it comes to him, but evidently he's supposed to play. But that's it on the Steelers side. Obviously on the new Browns side, a little bit different there, you know, and a lot of this took a turn early in the week there when Myles Garrett injured supposedly the other ankle during practice. Not good for him. Now there's expectations he might not play in a month, so the Browns obviously won't have him this weekend. That'll be a huge blow for him, even though he's a rookie. I was so looking forward to seeing Myles Garrett go against Alejandro Villanueva, but we're not going to see that now. I think really the only real other kind of notable injury when it comes to the Browns, David, I think it's worth talking about is Danny Shelton with that knee. Their starting defensive tackle, you remember their former first-round draft pick, I believe. This is a guy that missed quite a bit of training camp, all four preseason games with a knee injury. He's been listed as limited the last couple of days. I wouldn't be surprised if he's not able to play on Sunday against the Steelers. And then, you're talking about a pretty big blow to the middle of their defensive line as well too. And even if he does play, David, I don't think you're going to see a full strength Danny Shelton there because he obviously hasn't played so far throughout the preseason there. So they are banged up.
Let's throw Calvin Pryor in there.
Yeah, and he got released. He got waived after fighting with a teammate, but he's a backup. He was scheduled to be their backup safety entering the season there, so not too terribly big of a loss there. Now, obviously, they have four or five other guys listed on that injury report, but Myles Garrett and Danny Shelton, obviously the big names there. All right, with that said, let's kind of preview the 2017 Steelers here.
Yeah, let me throw a little little quiz at you as we think about how playing time is going to be divided up last year. And just a couple things. Dave, what percentage you can either do it on number, if you want to do number of snaps or percentage of snaps. How many snaps or percentage of snaps do you think Eli Rogers played last year?
Oh, wasn't it about 55 or so?
Dead on. 51% roughly, 550 snaps. So your guess on Eli Rogers this year, will he play more or less than 50% of the snaps?
Man, I think it's going to be right about that number. I'll go higher. just barely though, because I think Juju at some point is going to start eating into some of that. Let's remember that Eli missed what was it, like a game and a half or something?
Because at least, right? He hurt himself in that Eagles game running a crossing route over the middle, hurt his toe. And it missed the rest of that game and at least one more.
Yeah, didn't he get sat down for a team meeting?
Did he miss the Patriots game, right? Was that the Patriots game?
Oh, I don't remember off the top of my head, but it seemed like he missed a handful of games that he probably shouldn't have missed, that he would have picked up some extra snaps in. Yeah,
good point. So how about this? I threw out for Eli on the season 60 catches, 800 yards.
I think that's
feel about right.
I think it's a little optimistic, David, to be honest with you. I mean, it's going to be a if he hits those numbers, that's good. I mean, going to be a good problem to have. I think. I'm thinking more along the lines of.
He had 48 for basically 600 last year. He averaged 12.4. 48 for 594 with three touchdowns.
What'd you say? 60.
60. Yeah, 60 for 800.
Yeah, I'll be surprised if he hits that number. I'll take the under on both those.
Okay. We expect the offensive line to, you know, ideally health reasons to be in there all the time. Dave, the tight end split last year in terms of percentage of snaps, Jesse James played about 80%. David Johnson saw about 25%. Ladarius Green, obviously, you can throw him out because of the injury stuff, but he played 13%, and Xavier Grimble played 20%. Is Jesse James going to play 80% of the snaps again this year?
I don't think so, David. I really don't. I think the plan. I mean, you go out and get a guy like Vance McDonald.
By the way, I guess he had a rough day in practice yesterday with five or six drops.
Who, Vance?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's had some. You know, we talked about that when we got him. He's had a couple of drop issues here. Here's the thing, you know, we talked when the Steelers traded for him, right? You know, I think week one, obviously, it's going to be Jesse 1A and then McDonald 1B. But I think as this season rolls along, I think their roles are going to start shifting a little bit, because I think they're both comparable blockers. And I think just McDonald gives you more if you're going to use one. Now, obviously, we're going to still see a lot of two tight end sets, you know, personnel groupings with the Steelers. But I think as the season progresses, gets into week, you know, 4, 5, 6, I think you're going to start seeing McDonald maybe start getting the lion's share of those snaps, because I just think he gives you more from an offensive standpoint as far as what he can do and stretch the field. And look, if people stay healthy, David, there's going to be a lot of those opportunities for Vance McDonald, I think, to make some huge plays. Rob Gronkowski, he is not, but, I mean, there's some good tape on him working the middle of the field deep and working the middle of the field deep in a hurry.
The only guys to play more offensive snaps than Antonio Brown were Ali Villanueva, who played 100% of the snaps last year. So just as a point of reference for people, the Steelers ran 1,083 offensive snaps last year, and David DeCastro, who missed one snap on the season. Foster, Pouncey, you know, they missed some time. Marcus Gilbert obviously missed some time. So none of those guys were above 90. Antonio Brown played 90% of the snaps. Assuming he's healthy, he'll do the same this year, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. The thing is, you know, will his numbers go up or down?
Yeah. So let's ask that, because obviously the numbers were down slightly versus his career. So just over the last 3 years, I'll give you the receptions of the last 4 years. 110, 129 led the NFL, 136 led the NFL, and 106 last year. Do you put them between 106 and 136, somewhere, you know, 115, 120?
Yeah, I would. I'd put him probably, well, he had 129 in 2014. The thing is, and what we all hope, is he only has to play 15 games again this year. You know, so if that's the case, that 136 number, I think, is going to be tough to hit, as is that 1,800 yards. So, you know, his career average is 13.3 yards per reception. Let's give him, let's say a 12.5 average this year and give him, 125 reception seems about right.
Yeah, and you know, I think fans might be surprised, you know, because they might be surprised to know that Antonio Brown, because he catches a lot of short balls and has to make something out of it, that his, you know, his average yards per catch has been very consistent, down a touch last year, but the last 4 years, 13.6, 13.2, 13.5, 12.1. And as you mentioned, a 13.3 career average. So, you know, there are not a lot of receivers. I guess the larger point I'm making is there are not a lot of receivers out there averaging more than 15, 16 yards a catch. But just the quantity of balls that Brown catches is really, you know, what sets him apart.
And I wrote about this earlier in the offseason. His yak was down last year. I mean, his yards after the catch was down. And that probably explains the, you know, the dip a little bit, you know, from over 13 yards per reception down to 12.1. A lot of that, you know, you could say, you know, Martavis not there, and you look at the receivers that the Steelers had. Antonio had a lot of people around him last year. Defenses paid him a lot of mind. And because of that, even when he did get his catches, he was quickly corralled, didn't have a lot of room to work with. Now, it'll be interesting. You know, pick your poison now, boys. You know, you want to cheat a safety over to Antonio Brown's side. Well, you're going to have to deal with Martavis probably trying to run past your corner on the other side over there. So really going to be interesting. I think teams will still continue to make Antonio Brown try to beat them with heavy coverage until the Steelers and Martavis Bryant prove that there's other options, that they can use there. But I like Antonio Brown for 125 catches, roughly around, let's say, 1,500 yards.
Okay, so I imagine we're going to be similar on this. We assume Martavis Bryant's going to – so if Antonio Brown's playing 90% of the snaps, are we going to put Martavis Bryant at 70% of the snaps?
Yeah, that's
all. Of this is assuming health. You know, obviously, this is the caveat for everybody.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, but I mean, how many instances can you see him not being on the field? Not many. I mean, red zone, you're going to have him out there. I mean, I think you're probably going to have him out there in third downs. You know, I just can't see many options. You know, many times
there'll be some one wide receiver sets. There'll be some, you know, jumbo packages. Maybe that's a tad low. So I'd put him at 70 to 80%.
Yeah, I'd go 80% at least. I think, you know, assuming he stays healthy. I mean, I'd be surprised if he plays less amount of snaps than that.
What's the absolute max of number of balls he can catch? Can he catch 100 balls?
No, I think that's pushing it, David. I mean, I think he's still a. People are going to like this. I think he's still at max a four catch a game guy.
70 catches, 1,100 yards.
Well, what's
is he going to be? We talked about 15, 16 yards. Is Martavis a guy who can average 15, 16 yards?
I think he can average 15 yards. I think there's going to be some. I mean, there's going to be some home runs in here. We hope, right?
I'm with you. There's
going to be some 80s and some 78s and some 64s. You know, you hope for sure. I mean, is 70 the over and under with him?
I think it is. I think that's the right number.
I'll go slightly lower than 70. I mean, I'll go 68 times, 15.5. He can hit 1,000 yards. I don't think he will hit 1,000 yards. I think he can hit 1,000 yards, but I'll take under 70, just under 70 and just under 1,000 yards receiving. And the key thing is I like to see 10 or 11 touchdowns.
Yeah, so 70 times 15 will give you 1,050. So I'll take over 1,000, and I'll give him 15 yards a catch. And I'm with you. I think I'll give him a touchdown a game at 8. I'll root for the upside, as we all will, above that. Le'Veon Bell last year, in the past two seasons, has averaged 4.9 yards a carry. Can Le'Veon Bell average 5 yards a carry this year?
I don't think. I think it's a lot to add. You know, just look at his career average per touch average. You know, it's great. You know, but is it sustainable? Is my only thing there, and especially with the amount of carries and touches, you think he's going
261 in carries last year. Obviously, if he's healthy, he's going to go well over that. If you go 20 carries a game, it's 320. Is Le'Veon Bell looking at 350?
Boy, I hope not. I hope not.
Career high is 290. Does he top that?
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. Does he top so 300 yards, 300 touches at 5 yards a carry, obviously he's 1500 yards. That's, you know, averaging 90 some yards a game. Is he going to approach 15? He had 1268 last year in limited action. Is he looking at 1500 yards?
I think if anybody can do it, it's him, right? I mean, yep. you can't put it past him. I have him kind of coming in just shy of 1500, but I mean, when you look at his, I mean, how many balls is he going to catch? 60?
Yes. You know, he caught 75 last year in, you know, again, missed some time. 75. That's he was targeted 94 times last year, 75 catches.
Wow. I mean, that just goes to show. No wonder he wants number one running back money and number two wide receiver money. But I mean, look, he's going to touch the ball a total of at least 350 times, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'll put him at 25. I'll put him at 20, 25 times a game. So what, 250, and then another 150 more. That's 400 touches.
All right, so 400 touches on the season. You have him, Matt. All right, and you know his average.
Just as a perspective, last year he was at 325 and 336. I think 336, rough math. And, you know, missed three games, so that's about, you know, coming out to 400.
Yeah, that's a lot of work, right?
Yeah, you know, that's what they're going to do. They're not going to rest him. Oh, and okay, so let's do this. James Conner, does he get 100 touches on the season? I'll go under 100.
Yeah, it's got.
Nah, I won't, because maybe in the last game he gets 20. So I'll put him around 100.
Yeah, if you throw out that key last game, because obviously you would like to be able to get him 20 touches in that finale. Yeah, if you subtract a 15 game season, I think you can work him in at an average of 4 touches over a 15 game season, right?
I mean, yeah, I think that's the right number, around 50. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he got no touch. I mean, honestly, wouldn't surprise me if he didn't touch the ball here in week one.
So 60 to 70 touches, maybe. And then, of course, whatever he gets in week 16 or week 17 of the season, I think that sounds about right.
Okay, catches for Jesse James over under, you know, let's call it 2 a game, over under 32.
Yeah, I'll take the under.
Yeah, it just a point of reference. He had 39 last year. I think it'll be right around there again. Vance McDonald to a game.
That's yikes. He's probably. I'll take the under. I gotta take the under there.
Shout out to our friend we lost this past year, Alan Gifford. We need him around to keep charting this. For the 2017 season. Last but not least, Xavier Grimble only had 11 receptions last year. Over or under 25 receptions for Xavier Grimble?
Under.
Over or under 20?
Under.
Huh. Okay, I'll root for the over for Xavier that he gets over 20. Does he have a 4-reception game?
No.
Okay, let's just quick numbers on some of the other receivers. Catches on the year, Justin Houston, 20 catches.
No. Something's gone wrong if he hits that number, right?
If he gets 10 red zone catches and 10 other catches, Juju Smith-Schuster over under 25 catches.
I think he can hit that over.
Just a little bit over, or
just a little bit, say 28.
Darius Hayward Bay, 10 catches.
Yeah, right.
Under?
Under.
Darius Hayward Bay, 5 catches.
Under.
Darius Hayward Bay, 2 catches.
Name that tune.
All right. Let's go to the defensive side of the. Let's throw some Ben numbers out there just for fun.
I wonder how many heads that just went over. Okay, go ahead.
So Ben's career season numbers wise was 2014. By the way, Ben didn't miss a start in 2000. He missed three starts in 12. I think that was the Kansas City injury, the rib injury, if I remember right. 13 and 14 didn't miss a start. Started 11 games in 15, played in 12. I think he came in that Cleveland game as a sub for Landry Jones. And then missed one start last year. So is it, David, he missed one start, the New England start, due to injury. And I think he missed four starts the year before, but he played three of the games. I hear these guys saying, you know, Ben's missed so many starts over the years and stuff. He's missed four starts in the last 4 years. It's a narrative that doesn't hold. Anyway, not the point I was making. So that year, his biggest year was 4,952 in yards. So just under the 5,000 yard mark. Each of the last two seasons, he was just under 4,000. But of course, again, as I said, he didn't start all 16 games. Ben Roethlisberger, 4,200 yards passing, which he's done, you know, three times in his career. Over or under?
I'll take the over on that. I think he can push that. I mean, I think 5,000, I mean, that's a lot of damn yards.
He's got a lot of offense. He's got a lot of weapons.
Yeah, I want him to hit it, obviously, but I don't think he can. I think he can push the boundaries of it. I think he comes up something like a game short on it, though, you know. So I'm going to say he cracks at 4,200 and somewhere around 4,700, 4,800 yards passing.
Surprisingly, Ben's never thrown more than 32 touchdowns in a season, and we know the struggles on the road. So let me ask this in a two-part question for you, Dave. Will Ben again this year show the distinctive home-road split?
I don't think it will be as bad, if that's what you're asking.
God, I hope it's not. I mean, I have to say yes, because it's been 3 years in a row and there's no reason to think it won't be. They start on the road. We'll see if he can get off on the right foot. 32 touchdowns. Is he going to break his career high at two a game?
Wow. Boy, he's going to be right on top of it, I think. I think he throws anywhere between 30 to 35. I'll go ahead and say he gets the over.
I think people would be – I'm with you. I'll take the over on that as well. I think people would be surprised. Ben, in his third year, threw 23 interceptions. He's never had a season where he's thrown more than 16 interceptions other than that 1 year. I think people would be surprised to know that. He threw 16 2 years ago. Does Ben throw over under 14 interceptions this year? I'm picking 14 because that's my number. I think he throws 14.
I think he throws 15.
Okay. All right, so that covers Ben.
He's only sacked, 17 times last year?
Yeah,
what?
17 times last year. It's gone 42, 33, 20, 17 the last 4 years. What's your over-under, 20?
I would say over-under is 20.
Yeah, I'll say 22.
Yeah, I'll go over. I'll go in between years. I'll go 21.
Okay. I think offensively we've pretty much covered everybody who's in play.
Bud Dupree, double digit sacks, yes or no?
No, I mean I'll go eight, but I'll go just under. I think I'm a huge fan of Bud. I'm a huge fan of Bud. I'll go eight. I'll go eight for Shazier, and I'll go eight for T.J. Watt as well, all three of them.
Yeah, I don't think Shazier has that many, but I like the eight and eight on Dupree. I can roll with that as well. Total sacks by the Steelers defense.
Great question. What did they have last year? Did they have 40?
40-something, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think they popped that 40 number. And that's a big number, folks. If you're getting three a game, that gets you to 48. So I'm going to put them right around that number. I'm going to go 46.
What was it last year? Defense sacks.
I think it was
38, wasn't it?
That sounds low to me.
Regular season sacks, 38. Hold on a minute. I'll tell you in just a minute here what it is. Season stats. I wanted to say it was 40 for some reason. Along with you there. Quarterback sacks. Roethlisberger was sacked 16. No, they only had they gave up 21 team sacks during the regular season. They had 38. Team defensive sacks.
All right, good call. I'm going to go higher, 46.
I'll go higher. I'll go one more than yours. Actual retail price without going over 40. I'll go 48.
Defensive line, but the three starting defensive linemen over or under 15.
Say again?
The three starting defensive linemen, Tuitt, Hargrave, Hayward, all together, 15, over or under?
Well, that's another great question. I'll go over.
Yeah, I'm going to go right on 15. If we give the two outside guys 8 and we give those three 15, there's 31 right there. Defensive back, Mike Hilton, over or under 2 sacks?
Under.
Steelers interceptions defensively, 16.
It'd be a nice problem to have, wouldn't it?
I'm going over. I'm gonna take the number over on some interception.
I gotta take the under there. I don't see it.
Artie Burns and Joe Hayden each separately, over under 5.
I'll go over on Artie. Oh, each on getting 5?
Yeah.
Or combined 5.
No, each.
Yeah, wow. I'm going to go under on both of them.
Under on both of them. Okay. Shazier, does he have a 15-tackle game?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Starting 4 linebackers, interceptions, over under 5.
Shazier will have all of them.
I was going to say the same thing.
And probably just 4, so I'll go under.
Mike Mitchell, 3, over under.
Under.
Let's play the snap game a little bit on the defense. Javon Hargrave, a little bit of a surprise for people maybe that he played 47% of the snaps. I think we're going to see Javon Hargrave in there in some sub package football. He's not going to be a first down and off the field guy. So I'm expecting big things from Javon Hargrave. Will he play 47% of the snaps this year?
I think there's a good chance. Remember, he missed, didn't he, concussion last year? How many games did he suit up for last year? Didn't he have to miss one or so
I don't remember, but I thought he got most of them, but he might have missed one.
I think he can be right around that number, and maybe, assuming he's healthy, I think he can get right at around 50% maybe.
James Harrison, does he play 25% of the snaps this year?
Boy, remember, I was bullish on Watt earlier in the offseason, and people said,
you were.
Slow your roll. They're telling me, slow your roll, Dave. They said, no way Watt gets more than 50% of the snaps. Now the question that we're asking ourselves is, will James Harrison get what?
25%. He played 56% last year.
It ain't going to be 56% this year, I'll tell you that much.
No chance.
Everybody stays healthy, you have to think he's going to be lucky to get 25% of the snaps, right?
Yeah, I think that's the right number. I mean, so I apologize. I'm sure I'll be doing this a lot this year. Apparently, I said JJ a few times in the last podcast. I'm sure I'll do it again. Obviously, it's TJ. So TJ and Bud Dupree, you put them on target for – I put Bud on target for 85 and TJ on target for 75. You like those numbers?
Yeah, I do. And I think
Hayden and Burns should be out there. The starting secondary should be out there every play, right? If you're not hurt, you're playing.
Right, absolutely.
William Gay, 10% of the snaps.
Oh, yeah, he'll play more than 10% of the snaps.
I don't think he will. Mike Hilton, 50% of the snaps.
I'll go under.
And J.J. Wilcox, 20%.
Well, I mean, it's easy to take the under there.
Really? 20, under 20? I'm going to take the over on 20. Cody Sensabaugh, does he see the field this year as a defensive player? I mean, other than the odd play, somebody getting hurt, is he playing?
No, he shouldn't.
All right. Okay, we covered – there's our preseason kind of who's going to be on the field for the Steelers this year. I don't have anything else. Chris Boswell, over or under, misses on the season, 3.
Over.
I'll take under. Jordan Berry was unbelievably good last year, and punting average is not a great number because, as you see, he's dropped so many balls inside the 20, and if you're punting around midfield. But he averaged over 45 yards a punt last year, Dave. Kind of thoughts on Jordan Berry, anything to add? Is he going to have as good a season this year?
Boy, if his preseason was any indication, the Steelers are in good hands with both their punter and their kicker this year. So, You know, I think we're going to be talking about a lot of booming punts, a lot of them inside the opposition 20s if they are short. So I'm looking forward for a good season from him.
So Jordan Berry last year, 68 punts, a long of 64, and one blocked, averaged 45.6 punts. Over under blocks for and against the Steelers at 1.5.
Under.
On both sides?
Yeah.
All right.
Let's get into records for the Steelers and outlook, and then we got to pick some games real quick.
Yeah, and we'll just touch a little bit on a scheme for the game. I'll put the Steelers at 13-3. I think this is a really good football team. I think there'll be a week or two when they need to outscore somebody. I think this will be the season. We'll see the 480 points. We'll see them average 30 points a game. I don't feel comfortable saying that. Like I'm not locking and loaded that, but I think there should be enough games where the Steelers put up 35 to 40 points. I think that should happen 5 or 6 times this year, and I don't see them. I think the goal is that they never put up less than 21. So 21 is the low for the season, and they average more than 30. That gets me to 13-3.
I put up my season predictions yesterday on SteelersDepot.com, and I have the Steelers. I'm coming off my annual 10-6 and 11-5 record for the Steelers. I too think they can win 13 games, David. I think I'll be kind of disappointed if they don't. I think this is a 13-3 team, 12-4 at worst. I mean, this is a healthy team. This is a team that's had a lot of good pieces added to it late. Guys like Hayden, Wilcox, McDonald. There's a lot of, and you look at the division not being all that great, in my opinion. You look at the first half of the schedule. There's no reason that they can't go 13-3. So that's what I have them going. I have them playing the Patriots in the AFC Championship game and winning it this time. And, you know, I didn't let my optimisms in there. I have them beating the Green Bay Packers in the Super Bowl.
Love it. Love it. I can't argue with any of that. I haven't written everything down, but I'll put the Steelers and the Pats in the title game on the other side.
Hey, who knows? You know. Who, y'all, and let me tell you, I had the Patriots going 14-2, I think. So, maybe this is, well, I mean, it's too early to say this isn't.
Well, there you go. The Steelers beat the Patriots at Heinz Field, and all of a sudden, you know, you got your two, you got at least two losses on them.
Right. I think home field advantage would be huge for the Steelers against the Patriots in the playoffs. Sure. We don't know what's going to happen, but I mean, if there's any year to be optimistic about the Steelers, their offense, I mean, there's absolutely no reason not to expect them to put up points. And this defense is another year, a year older now. It's got some experience in there. Yeah, there's going to be issues. I think we're going to be talking about during the year, missed tackles, maybe some explosive plays, but this should be a better defense than last year. And if it was trending in the right direction in the second half of last year, and if they make a few improvements this year, I think they're going to be in a good spot. Top 10, I don't know. But, get them in the top 12, top 13, I think that might be enough there. So, like I said, I have a Packers-Steelers Super Bowl with the Steelers winning it. Who do you have the Steelers playing?
Who do I have the Steelers playing? It's not the team I want to see them play, but I think Seattle is going to be very good this year. They've upgraded the receiving core a little bit. Russell Wilson, I think, is a really good quarterback. Them getting Sheldon Richardson makes that a ferocious front seven with, obviously a very good back secondary behind them. So I'll have the Seahawks coming out. I'll have Tampa as my dark horse team in the NFC.
Yeah, and we're going to get accused of being nothing but fanboys now.
So the first half of the season, you talked about the schedule. Anything other than 7-1 would be a disappointment, right? It's Kansas City on the road is the game that you look at and say, okay, you could certainly after last night say, you can definitely lose that one. But you'd like to, if you make the turn at 7-1, you're feeling great, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's no reason to think you should not open up this season at least, 5-0 here. You better beat the Browns, Vikings, Bears, and Ravens from what I've seen, in the Jaguars as well, too. So then that Chiefs game in week six, I mean, look, that's at Arrowhead. That's going to be a tough game. Right now, Eric Berry or no Eric Berry, this is going to be a tough game. Then it comes, you know, week seven. Can you beat the Cincinnati Bengals on the road? The Lions could be an interesting game, but one you think the Steelers should have. And, yeah, I mean, I'm with you. This team should be, you know, let me tell you, at worst, they better be 6-2. But, you know, I think anything worse than 7-1, people saying, what the hell is going on, probably. And that's obviously a good problem to have.
Okay, and just in terms of the game coming up Sunday, Kirby Wilson, the Browns running back coach, was at the podium earlier today, talked about really wanting to establish the run and show that they could dominate on both lines. For the Browns, we talked about it. I hope you got to hear Scott Petrak with us on Wednesday. This is a team that's building from inside out. Obviously, the loss of Myles Garrett is a big one, but this is a very strong offensive line. They will try to run the football. They have a couple good backs in Crowell and Duke Johnson, and they've got a rookie quarterback. So the Steelers are going to try to, you know, shut down the run, Dave. The Browns on Sunday, over under 90 yards rushing.
For the Browns, over under 90 yards rushing. Nah, under.
So that's what they're going to do. DeShone Kizer, I love the pick. I expect him to do well this year. I don't expect him to do well Sunday. Does he pass for 180 yards?
Oh, wow. That's a good question as well, too. You know, they're going to try to keep things, you know, Hugh Jackson's going to try to keep things real simple with him, I think. You know, move him around out of the pocket. Just typical Hugh Jackson, you know, stuff. A lot of misdirection stuff in there, because I think he's going to want to give him some easy throws. The question is, can he connect deep a few times down the field with a guy like Corey Coleman or a guy like, you know, Sammy Coates? I think he'll get one or two deep, explosive plays in there. That's about it. I'll say this. I don't think Kizer throws for more than 210 yards.
Okay, well, that would suggest with 90 yards rushing, less than 90 yards rushing and less than 210, puts him in, under 300 yards of total offense. I like the Steelers relatively. I like Scott's idea of the score. I think the Steelers are going to be able to move the football. I think they win the turnover battle by maybe two. I think they get a couple picks in this game. I think it'll be a comfortable win. I think they win this one 27-10.
Yeah, there's no reason for this game to be close. Steeler fans will be hollering with the win if it is close. Even Le'Veon Bell, I think this is a game Le'Veon Bell can have 140, 150 total yards in. And all, I mean, you expect Antonio Brown to do his thing. Over there, you expect the Browns to have a turnover to confuse DeShone Kizer as well, too. I mean, how can you not pick the Steelers big in this? I'm going to go bigger than you, though. I'm going to go 31-13 Steelers.
Yeah, people are going to listen to everything I said about averaging 30 points a game and pick them 27 at Cleveland. They're going to ask, what the hell are you doing? You're talking out of both sides of your mouth.
Math down.
All right, so a lot there. Let's just roll through our picks quickly. We won't give the whole drama of the background because we're well over an hour, but it's a pretty extensive season preview here for the Steelers. So let's get to it. Dave and I both started 0-1. We were on the Pats last night. The Jets with Josh McCown open at Buffalo. I think everybody thinks the Jets have a legit shot of getting the number one overall pick this year. They're an 8-point dog in Buffalo. Who you like?
Bills lay the 8.
I'm going to surprise, and I'm going to take the Jets with 8 points in a low-scoring affair. The Bears are at home getting 6, and it's Mike Glennon, of course, starting in front of Mitch Trubisky, who they traded up to get. The Falcons losing Mike Shanahan, defending NFC champs. I think they roll. I'll lay the 6 with Atlanta.
Yeah, give me Atlanta to cover on the road as well.
Houston Texans, Deshaun Watson never really had a chance at the job. It'll be Tom Savage getting the start for the Texans against Blake Bortles and the Jags. His Texans defense was the best in the NFL last year. They get J.J. Watt back this year. They're laying 5 at home. I ravaged Houston with the flood. Dave, Texans in a blowout, double digits.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Texans lay the point there, you know, with Watt back and all like that. Yeah, I expect them to win this game big.
Early important division game in the NFC East. I don't have a great sense for either of these teams. Carson Wentz getting his second starting his second season. A 1-point favorite at Washington and Kirk Cousins. I got no view on this one, Dave. Give me the home team getting a point.
Boy, I'll take the Eagles. I'll take the Eagles on the road laying the point.
Arizona goes to Detroit. Detroit's getting two at home. It's still the Carson Palmer, Larry Fitzgerald show. Again, two teams. I don't have a, you know, Matthew Stafford gets the big contract. Why not? I'll take the home team again with the points.
Yeah, give me Arizona on the road. What are you showing? Two on this?
Two.
Yeah, I'll lay the two on the road with the Cardinals.
Tennessee Titans, one of the darling kind of one of the picks that everybody teams everybody likes. No longer a dark horse. They and the Texans are the two teams that people like in the AFC South. They're -2.5 against the Raiders. Obviously, Derek Carr back at the helm. Big questions about the Raiders defense. I'll take the Titans. I think they win this comfortably, laying 2.5.
Yeah, give me the – I mean, I know it's the old East Coast, West Coast thing here, and I'm bucking the trend on a couple of these teams here. But at Raiders, I think – look, I like Tennessee to come out of that division, obviously. But, you know, I think they're getting a little bit maybe too much hype right now. Give me Derek Carr on the road, give me those 2.5 points.
The Bengals -3 at home with the Ravens. I'll take Cincinnati.
I will. Boy, a couple of those guys I had my eye on, those pass rushers there with Lawson and the other kid that got Jordan. I'm drawing a blank real quick on his name, but looking good. This Bengals defense is going to be a lot better than their offense this year. And with that said, Ravens haven't had a lot of time to work with Joe Flacco and the rest of that offense. What line are you showing on this?
3.
Yeah, give me the Bengals, lay those 3.
Okay, we both took the Steelers. They're -9. The Rams are at home -4.5 against the Colts. No Andrew Luck in this opener. Give me the Rams. No Aaron Donald for the – we don't see holdouts in the NFL anymore. Aaron Donald not in L.A. yet.
Rams minus what, 4?
Yep, 4.5.
Oh, 4.5?
Sorry, so 4.5, yeah.
You know what? I realized Luck not being in this game as well too, but look at the quarterback on the other side there. Give me those 4.5 points. I think the Colts win this one outright.
Okay, Seahawks, the great first game. This is one of the 4:25 games. The Packers -3 hosting the Seahawks. I'll be intently watching this one. Dave, I'm going to take my NFC pick and I'll take the 3 points with Seattle.
Give me the Packers at home, but Seahawks offensive line going to have problems protecting Wilson again this year, especially there at left tackle. I think turnover going to be a difference in this game. So give me the Packers at home to cover.
Those are our two NFC champs matching up here in week one. Carolina at the 49ers. Carolina -4.5. People seem to love Carolina. I love Christian McCaffrey. I think he's going to do great things this year. He's my even with seeing what Hunt did last night, he's my early pick for rookie of the year. I'll take Carolina, but I think San Francisco is going to be better this year.
Yeah, I think this game, this is reverse of the East team going west here. So I'm going to go against what I just did earlier there. I think San Francisco keeps – I don't think they'll win it, but I think they keep this to a field goal game late. Hoyer hasn't looked too terribly bad in the time that I've watched him during the preseason there. They obviously have, you know, issues, though, on both sides of the ball. But you know, I think they're able to keep this game at least close. So give me the 49ers plus the 4.5 points at home.
I'm a Brian Hoyer fan. Giants, the Sunday night game, the Giants at Dallas. Dallas -4. Apparently Zeke's going to play in this game. Odell Beckham Jr. is 50-50. Give me the Cowboys -4.
Yeah, this just doesn't point good for the Giants, does it? I tell you, one guy I'm looking forward to see play, though, drafted him in a few leagues this year kind of late, is Eric Ingram, that tight end there for them. I think he could end up having 60, 70 maybe catches for the Giants this year. All that said, give me Cowboys and lay those points.
Monday night, the early game, 7 o'clock, the Saints at the Vikings -3. Remember Adrian Peterson now down there with New Orleans. They've always had some interesting backs down there. We'll see what Peterson can do. This is a good Vikings team. Question about quarterback play again will be the big issue with Sam Bradford there. Unfortunately for Teddy Bridgewater, that injury, we'll see if he ever returns from that. But I'll take the home team, the Vikes -3.
Yeah, give me – I always seem to get beat up by the Saints on the road sometimes, I think. But I'm going to continue on. Give me the Saints plus the points on the road.
And I'm going to go a little bit as a surprise here. Phillip Rivers and the Chargers, their first game is the L.A. Chargers go to Denver in a divisional game. That's a 10-20 start on Monday night, two Monday night games. I'm going to take the Chargers +3 in Denver. Joey Bosa is going to be right there with T.J. Watt and Ryan Shazier for Defensive Player of the Year. Give me the Chargers +3.
I like it. I like it. I like it a lot. The quarterback, uncertainty there. I don't think can Trevor Siemian, handle and carry that starting role all year long. I'm not so sure. I think Denver's going to take it. I think Denver could finish last in that division this year. By the way, so give me the Chargers on the road. I'll take those 3 points.
All right, Dave, this might be our longest podcast that not draft related, but hell of a lot of fun. Lots of excitement. We'll of course, Dave and I will be tweeting during the game. Steelers Depot will have, tons of recaps after the game. I'll have an article up ASAP. We'll be around and we'll be recapping it Monday. So 2017 season's upon us, man. That was great fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Great fun. Sorry we ran a little bit long again. Once again, we won't charge for that. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what you listen to, or even if you don't and you want to donate to the cause, you can do so. Look, if you made it this long, you obviously like.
You're around.
You're around for something. Even though I messed up on that last one, David, I left our parting goodbyes on. You never know what Easter eggs I'm going to give the listeners here with my crappy sound editing here. But in all fairness, and we've got a few donations in this past week. We appreciate it as well, too. If you feel like donating to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com, hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. David, I can't wait. Football is here. Have a great weekend.
Hey, and a great slate of games Saturday. Pitt, Penn State. You got some great matchups with Notre Dame in Georgia. You've got Ohio State, Oklahoma, a bunch of others. So a great Saturday before they get into the conference play. So have a great weekend. Stay safe, South Florida. We'll be back at you Monday. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.